support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Lost Patience, a new podcast from KUOW and the Seattle Times, sets out to explore why so many people with severe mental illness go untreated in Washington State. In its latest episode, the team looks at the legacy of Northern State Hospital. Today, the mostly abandoned buildings sit tucked in a lush valley in the town of Cedro Woolley, surrounded by sweeping mountain vistas. Northern State was once a model for psychiatric care in the U.S., with ornate buildings and a working farm, grounds designed by the famed Olmsted family. But it's also where patients experience treatment that we now consider to be inhumane. Here's host Will James.
When you talk to people today about these old psychiatric hospitals, you get one of two responses. One is that these were hellholes. Patients were warehoused, neglected, forgotten, abused, experimented on, and we were right to shut them down. But these days, you also find people who are nostalgic for these asylums.
In the third episode of Lost Patients, we hear a letter from a patient, Emmett, who was administered shock therapy without his consent.
"There were perhaps six of us," he writes, "who were scheduled for shock treatments that day. I felt as if we were convicts without the honor of having a trial by jury, waiting our turn in the electric chair."
Electroconvulsive therapy is still in use today, but patients opt in and are given anesthesia. Some other treatments that were administered at Northern State are absolutely not considered medically sound today. Those included forced insulin comas and lobotomies. You can hear more, including an interview with a former nurse, Joanne, who was present during these procedures, on the third episode of Lost Patients.
"And you hope that what you're doing is correct and is helpful. But you can, you know, have a lot of question about. You tried to have faith. You know."
But according to some, Northern State's legacy isn't just about these dark chapters in medical history. It was also a place where patients found compassion. Joanne, the nurse, says she saw care and tenderness during her time at Northern State Hospital. This was a time when the state funded more beds for mental health treatment and people had somewhere to go besides the street. We spoke with someone else who feels that Northern State Hospital still has something to teach us about caring for people with mental illness. The Lost Patients team put us in contact with John Horn. Horn is a board member of the Cedro Woolley Museum and a researcher of Northern State Hospital's history and burials. As part of his research, he's uncovered hundreds of headstones for patients who died on the grounds. He's helped families find the remains of, literally, lost patients. John, hello. Thank you very much for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So few people have examined the legacy of Northern State Hospital since it closed almost 51 years ago. What made you want to look more into the place?
It's kind of a long story. I started working at the Drug Treatment Center on the main campus in 2011. And I've always been interested in architecture and historic buildings and stuff like that. And that's kind of how it started. And I knew that it had been a mental hospital at one point. And just over the years working there, I was intrigued in what the buildings were used for. I like exploring abandoned building videos and stuff like that. So it kind of checked that box too. And then I'd really just think about the people a lot over the years and like, who was there? What happened to them? What were their lives like? What about the people who worked there? You know, what were their experiences back then in the mental hospital that started, you know, in 1912-ish area? And then there were times when I would have a client in my office who would be too low functioning to take care of himself, but too high functioning to qualify for any state services of any kind. And I'd be looking out my window at these huge buildings that's sitting empty. And I'd just be thinking, like, if only there were somewhere for this person to go. You know, we had those resources at one point.
Yeah.
My interest kind of came from all of that, really, over the years.
You have uncovered 200 headstones at the Northern State Hospital Cemetery in Cedro Woolley. What happens? How do you uncover a headstone, and what happens next when you do that?
It's kind of tricky because you can't dig. The Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, I need to work with them more on kind of the rules for that. But I have a metal rod and a poke around and essentially locate one underground and start building a map of where they're located. And I've located over 600 so far. If it's within about an inch or two of the surface of the ground, I'll edge around it. And that's kind of how I expose them. And when I started, there were probably about two dozen visible. And last time I counted, there's over 200. I think there's about 207 of them visible now.
And from what you can tell from the headstones, who's buried there? I mean, who are we talking about? Mostly patients?
Yeah, it's only patients there. The people buried in the cemetery were only patients who were Catholic and not claimed by the families because it was against their religious beliefs to be cremated.
Oh, wow. So all the Catholic patients are the ones that ended up being buried. I mean, is there an age theme or anything that connects them all besides that?
Not really. I did want to point out that cremated remains were buried there in later years. They kind of stored them up in the attic of the morgue, hoping family would come forward someday and claim them. And eventually they were buried there as well. But they were all in unmarked graves. Doing my research for burials, people kind of vilify Northern State. They don't realize what it actually was. And a lot of the people there died in their 70s, 80s, or 90s of old age. Because when you got to a point in your life when you couldn't take care of yourself, instead of going to a nursing home or assisted living and stuff like that that we have now, you went to a state hospital. So it encompassed all of those services, assisted living, nursing home, like end of life, essentially end of life care for people. So a lot of people don't realize that's what it was. So they talk about the high death rate there. It's like, well, the high death rate is because a lot of people went there to die, unfortunately.
And they served a lot more various kinds of patients with different health needs. What other kinds of artifacts or documents have you been able to uncover in your research there, John?
As far as just items from Northern State, I have tons. I have different pieces of furniture. I have documents, dishes, keys, pictures. I have pretty much anything someone could think of.
And how do those items sort of paint a picture for you of how the hospital operated? I mean, have you learned more through those items about what life was like at Northern State Hospital for patients?
I have some of the pictures, and you can just see different events that they had, like dyeing Easter eggs, stuff like that. I have a video from 1952 that was actually filmed there, and it shows baseball games going. It shows people working on the farm. It showed the daily operations of the facility. What I've learned a lot about how it operated was actually through former employees that worked there. I started my Facebook group, and a lot of former employees have joined that. And I've gotten a chance to talk to them and chat with them a bit and hear from people who were actually there what life was like at Northern State. And it's definitely wildly different from the generally perceived view of the public.
Yeah, tell me more about that. How so?
Like I tend to say, is that it was a wonderful place where thousands of people lived the best lives they could have had at the time. People who couldn't take care of themselves, there was somewhere to go to be cared for. And people who worked there, everyone who worked there that I know had absolutely loved it and said that it was a fantastic place where people tend, like I said, people tend to vilify it. People who have a personal connection to it tend to steer away from Northern State things online because you do hear a lot of really negative things about it. You hear a lot of rumors. And the Facebook group I started is not about that. It is about the accurate history of the facility. And sometimes there's negative things that come up. I mean, were there things that were done there that we look at as barbaric today? Like, absolutely. I mean, it's a 100-year-old mental institution. We were still learning about mental health and behavioral health and medical and everything back then. So, yeah, some bad things did happen, but that is part of the history of it as well. And we have to accept the bad with the good.
Yeah, the things we heard about in this episode 3 of Lost Patients include the treatments that were common in the early and mid 20th century for severe mental illness. Things like, shock therapy without anesthesia or consent, insulin comas being induced, water therapy when people were restrained in hot bathtubs or cold bathtubs, and in some cases, in some extreme cases, lobotomy. That said, I'm hearing you talk about sort of the ways in which this was also a place where people could go. It was a time when the state actually took responsibility for people in distress, people who were mentally ill, and paid for treatment instead of leaving them to end up on the street. There is this like push and pull here where I think a modern audience says it seems terrible to shut people away. And in some cases, they were simply women going through menopause or somebody who was gay or an immigrant. But in other cases, this, as you said, was a place that provided care for people at the end of life or who, you know, desperately needed a place to go. I mean, how do you kind of hold both of those ideas in your head at once as you're doing your research here at Northern State?
I acknowledge all of it. And like you said, it was a place for people to go and be taken care of. But there are people that were there that probably shouldn't have been there. You know, they didn't have significant mental illness. People were committed for ridiculous reasons years ago. We also do talk about like shock therapy and stuff like that. I know some of the people who did the shock therapy on patients up there. And all of these treatments we had back then at the time we thought were therapeutic. Of course, we know different now. There were some very barbaric things done, but a point that I like to make a lot is what we're doing today about mental health is barbaric. We just don't know yet. I mean, give it 50 years and we're going to look back and be like, I can't believe we did this to people. But right now we think it's therapeutic, and that's exactly what happened there. A big thing about a Northern State too is that I talk about how it should be preserved, not only to remember that the resources that we once had for people that are now out on the street and, I mean, out dying on the street, essentially, not being taken care of, but should also be preserved to remember the things that should never be repeated, the things that we did in the past that we learned from, that we know, okay, that was a bad idea. Let's not do that again.
It also seems like an era where there was care taken to the building of the institution, the way that the architecture looked and the way that the campus grounds looked, like an attempt to really make it a pleasant place for people to be living. At the same time, as Will, the host of Lost Patients, points out in the episode, that could also be seen as sort of selling the institution to the outside world so that they would assume that it was a pleasant place and maybe not look, you know, closer at the way people were treated. How do you think about the design and the way that the campus actually worked and how it stacks up to reality?
All of Northern State Hospital, it was modeled after occupational therapy. It's designed by the Olmsted brothers, very famous landscape architects. The building design, all of that was really thought out, right down to when you look at an aerial photo of it, instead of everything being oriented like north to south, it's tilted slightly to the southeast. So you could look out and see the mountains throughout the valley, stuff like that. You mentioned earlier about kind of patients being locked up or stored away. The occupational therapy thing, because I've had people bring up, you know, forced labor, stuff like that. Well, the patients did a good portion of the work, but it was always 100% voluntary. And the idea of the whole thing was to, instead of lock someone away in some institutional looking place, give them a place that's beautiful, surrounded by beauty, surrounded by wonderful landscaping and flowers, and give them something to do. Give them a reason to get up in the morning and give them a purpose. And they believe that that time was very therapeutic. And I think anyone can agree that's more therapeutic than being locked in a cold, dark room all the time. So that's what it was based on. And that's how it operated the whole time it was operating, essentially. So there's a lot of misinformation about that on how it worked. But that's what the design of the building was for. I mean, it's not institutional looking. The grounds were well kept. There was a lot of gardening, a lot of activity going on for people to do. There were only two locked wards and there were no fences. So people weren't locked up other than very specific circumstances. Hmm.
During this process, John, you've been able to connect with the descendants of Northern State Hospital patients and in some cases give them more information about their family members. Carrie Davison is one of those whose great-grandmother Lillian was committed at Northern State Hospital by her husband after she contracted syphilis, which eats away at your brain if it's untreated. Lillian died at Northern State when she was just 33. Do descendants like Carrie ever tell you about how your research affects them personally? I mean, giving them closure, for example?
I've actually had quite a few people reach out to me, even before the Seattle Times article, looking for information on family members, looking for a grave and stuff like that. And of course, I got a lot more after the whole Seattle Times story. And people are very grateful. I mean, it's really a source of pain for them because back then they weren't told anything. I mean, they find out later that they had a family member there and then they want to know more about it. And, you know, most records were destroyed after 50 years. So they get to the point where they can't find any information. At least I could find a grave marker.
Yeah.
But that is, I do get contacted by quite a few people, and they're all really grateful for it.
How did Northern State Hospital eventually close?
The short version that I was told is the state wanted to save money, even though it was self-sustaining. And the governor at the time, Dan Evans, was the one who made the decision to close it. There were huge protests back then. Buses of people going to Olympia trying to protest it. I've got letters, I mean, folders full of letters from people talking about wanting to keep it open. So it was a big issue. It was a huge employer and it was a huge resource we needed. But at that time, the Community Mental Health Act was going into effect. So they were going to have more smaller facilities out in the community to take care of people. The problem is that never happened. They never ended up funding that whole thing. So they closed the facilities that we had to take care of people. Mm. And that was it. We didn't actually get the stuff that were promised.
I think it's easy to look back and simplify things, John. And I'm hearing in your voice that you would really like Northern State Hospital to be remembered for more than just its worst treatment of certain cases of certain patients who were involuntarily locked away for, you know, various treatments that we now consider barbaric and were unfairly in many ways considered to be undesirable by society. You would like the whole history of Northern State, including people who found refuge there and found treatment there, to be remembered. Do you have any final thoughts for us about how we can keep all these complexities about this place in our mind when we think about it?
My biggest thing is I like to kind of stomp on false rumors about it. And that's a big thing is when, you know, you hear something, kind of take it with a grain of salt, because I've seen people spread a lot of information around about the facility that's not true. And at the same time, also acknowledge the things that are true. Because like I said, you know, bad things didn't happen there. Bad things happen everywhere. But that's my biggest thing is just be accurate with the history of it. Be accurate with what happened there and what it was all about. That's my biggest thing with the whole facility.
Why do you like this work? I mean, what drives you to keep looking for this history and keep uncovering it?
It's the people. Even specifically with my work in the cemetery, I've always liked cemeteries anyways, even as a child. But Northern State in particular, I walked through there and what's frustrating to me is that every person has a story. Every person had a life. And there are hundreds of them that have been reduced to a chunk of concrete with a number and initial on it. And that's it. That is the only thing left of that human being. Their life is gone. Their memory is gone. And my goal at the cemetery is to be able to at least see those chunks of concrete and maybe bring some of these people back to life. I've researched some people that I found there and learned more about them, learned where they're from. I mean, Carrie Davidson's great-grandmother, Lillian. And then there's some people like from Whatcom County that contacted me that had family there. And then you can kind of bring this person back to life who's been completely erased from history. And that's my big thing is people should be forgotten. Everyone's important. Everyone's special. And I just feel that it's really disrespectful to have this big mowed field up there with grave markers underground that no one can see. And I mean, these people are not only physically buried there, but their whole history and their whole being is under the dirt and buried, just hidden away like they were.
John Horn is a board member of the Cedra Woolley Museum and a researcher of Northern State Hospital's history and burials. John, thank you very much for being here and thank you for your work.
No, thank you.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.